From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
The counting continues in California. As we've previously reported, the early returns reported in the June 7th primary heavily favored Hillary Clinton, apparently taken from districts where she was the strongest, resulting in media coverage that indicated the former Secretary of State won big over competitor Bernie Sanders. As we've also reported previously, on primary day as of 10:45 p.m. Pacific time, with 38% of districts reporting, Clinton was ahead 60.4% to Sanders' 38.5%, a 21.6% lead, and the two were evenly split in later returns overnight, with Clinton leading 50.7% to 49.3%, cutting Clinton's overall lead over Sanders almost in half to about 12.5%. On the Friday following the primary, it was reported that the California Board of Elections had about 2.5 million votes that were not counted, almost 43% of the total. The counting has been reported daily at the website of the California Board of Elections. As of the opening of business Monday, California's Board of Elections still has more than 1.2 million uncounted ballots, while Clinton's lead has been cut to about 460,000 votes. More than half of those uncounted ballots, 55.28% of them, or a little more than 664,000 uncounted ballots, are so-called provisional ballots, mostly from people who voted in the Democratic primary but are registered with no party preference. Polls of those voters showed a heavy preference for Sanders.
It is our goal and it is our hope that this day begins a week of meetings which will make a greater contribution to the cause of peace in the world than any meetings ever held in this House. That is a great goal. We believe we can achieve it.
That was then-President Richard Nixon, 43 years ago this past Saturday, as he welcomed then-Soviet leader Leonid Brezhnev to the White House, the first visit by Brezhnev to Washington. It signaled the beginning of a period that was then known as détente. However, détente began unraveling in 1979.
I have notified the Olympic Committee that with Soviet invading forces in Afghanistan, neither the American people nor I will support sending an Olympic team to Moscow.
That was President Jimmy Carter announcing a boycott of the 1980 Moscow Olympics after the Soviet Union entered Afghanistan at the invitation of the Afghan government. Soon to be President Ronald Reagan, during his acceptance speech in July of 1980 at the Republican National Convention, added fuel to the fire.
When we move from domestic affairs and cast our eyes abroad, we see an equally sorry chapter in the record of the present administration. A Soviet combat brigade trains in Cuba just 90 miles from our shores. A Soviet army of invasion occupies Afghanistan, further threatening our vital interests in the Middle East. America's defense strength is at its lowest ebb in a generation, while the Soviet Union is vastly outspending us in both strategic and conventional arms. Our European allies, looking nervously at the growing menace from the East, turned to us for leadership and failed to find it.
If that sounds familiar to you, it's because perhaps events today are echoing the events of 35 years ago. We discussed this with Dmitry Babich, who's a senior editor at Russia's Sputnik News Agency, via Skype Sunday. We began with a discussion of a speech delivered by President Vladimir Putin this past Friday at the St. Petersburg International Economic Forum.
I think that it makes sense to talk about the forum and Putin's answers because they sort of reflect just about all the main issues of today's world. And I think it was very indicative, you know, the fact that Putin likes to be questioned by his enemies when he has an economic forum or another big international event. There are always people hostile to him who are invited as moderators. Well, I think you know Fareed Zakaria.
For sure. CNN, yeah.
Yeah, and you know his columns on in the Washington Post, which is a very different paper from what it used to be in the early 70s. I would say the opposite of what it used to be. And Fareed Zakaria just asked some really strange questions. Like one of them was, why do you admire Donald Trump? And the answer from Putin was that, why are you always doing card staking? Why do you always ascribe to me things that I never said? I didn't say anything positive about Trump. I just said that he became an easily recognizable person on television. That was just about all I said. But you say that I quote him a wise man, a great man. I never did it. So it was an embarrassment for Zakaria. He had to refer himself to international news agencies, which like misinterpreted something that Putin said. But I think it reflects a very important problem in today's world. Not only Putin, but all the political leaders whom the West doesn't like, they're continuously misquoted, misinterpreted, demonized, demonized by quotes which are usually taken out of context. And that is not only about Russia. I noticed the same when the Western press talked about the Balkan leaders, including Slobodan Milosevic. I noticed the same when the Western press is talking about Iranian presidents. And Putin is continuously a victim of the same tactic. You know, the last 2 weeks, maybe, you know, we were at the height of that trend because it was just astounding. You know, Putin was accused by the European press of influencing the elections in Austria, where a non-systemic rightist candidate almost won the vote, you know, Norbert Hofer. And the problem is that Putin did not say anything about the Austrian election. The head of the European Commission, Jean-Claude Juncker, he said quite openly before the voting day, actually, you know, a few hours before people were casting their votes, he said that he didn't want Norbert Hofer to win. And the European press never said it was interference in Austrian elections. Right. But Putin's conspicuous silence was interference. And the same thing is now, the same thing is playing out before our very eyes with the so-called Brexit referendum in Britain. Putin did not say anything about Brexit until yesterday. But the British Prime Minister, David Cameron, said that Putin would be in raptures if the British people voted for leaving the Union. And yesterday at the meeting with the press, again, Putin was asked the same question. Wouldn't you be happy if the British people voted for leaving the European Union? And Putin again had to say, we'll accept any decision of the British people. And he, for the first time in many years, I think Putin sort of retorted to Prime Minister David Cameron. He said, if he thinks that this referendum is so dangerous, if the head of the European Council, Donald Tusk, says that it could mean the end of the Western civilization, you know, if people voted no, then why did David Cameron initiate that referendum in the first place? And why does he blame Putin for, you know, by being silent? You know, Putin is somehow putting all of Europe in danger.
Well, it's the same. He's been conspicuously silent, quote unquote, about that, about the Austrian election, about Trump. That's what they, you know, ascribe to him, conspicuous silence when he says nothing. And they made the same. Hillary Clinton herself made the same comment about, you know, partying in the Kremlin if Donald Trump were elected. And CNN, I mean, Zachariah could be asked the question, why does CNN play Trump all the time, except when Clinton's on, and all she does when she's on is talk about Trump?
Well, the problem is that the modern Western leaders, they're like a mafia gang. I mean, they're all together. They quite openly do some very terrible things, like, for example, the fact that they were prepared to see the former Ukrainian president Yanukovych
they accused him of leaving Kiev. If he didn't leave Kiev, he would be taken by the Maidan crowd and he would be killed. You know, there is absolutely no question that he would be physically destroyed. And they accused him of leaving Kiev then. And let me remind you that just a few weeks before that, Yanukovych met with Angela Merkel, the Chancellor of Germany, with the head of the European Commission, Mr. Barroso, with other people who shook hands with him, who said that he was a great president of Ukraine, that he was a respected leader. So it's very much like, you know, the mafia guys from Some Like It Hot. They congratulate you on your birthday, they shake hands with you, and then suddenly there is a guy with a submachine gun who jumps out of your birthday cake and kills you. And they applaud. So these people do horrible things. And whenever someone puts these things in doubt, even maybe a bad person, you know, they immediately start attacking that person, and they blame all their enemies, all their potential enemies of being in cahoots with that guy who actually told the truth about him. So Donald Trump may be not a very good person, and he is certainly not the person that I would dream of as a presidential candidate, but he said a lot of rightful things about Hillary Clinton and about Washington in general. And now, despite the fact that Putin never met Trump, despite the fact that Putin never said anything positive about Trump, they say that Putin is going to celebrate if Trump wins. So it's just unbelievable. I've never seen such a low moral standard in politics in general and in international politics in particular.
You know, I mean, they did exactly that with Gaddafi also. They, after years and years of demonizing him, there was a rapprochement, and the West and Libya were getting along famously. You had some folks being rendered to Libya. You had cooperation with the Libyan security services. You had American business people doing business with Libya. And just as that started to come to fruition, including a favorable report that was coming out of the UN about life in Libya, the bombing started and we got what we have now, and they murdered Gaddafi.
Exactly. And the problem was that the person in Europe who was most hospitable towards Gaddafi was the former French president Nicolas Sarkozy, who was actually the first one to bomb Gaddafi, actually a few months after hosting him in Paris, after allowing Gaddafi to place his wigwam right next to the Elysee Palace. So this is the kind of camping that these guys are offering you. First, they suggest you camp in their backyard, and then they say they send bombers to kill you. That is very much like mafia behavior. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I know. Some Like It Hot. That's a perfect image of it, too. There's a statement out of the German foreign minister about the war games that are ongoing and the ones coming in the near future, Poland, all of the NATO countries coming up to Russia's borders with pretty large military assembly there. And the German foreign minister speaking out strongly against it. And you also had Sarkozy at the economic summit calling for an end immediately to sanctions, saying that we've had too many things between us for too long, that we need to put an end to it now.
Well, let me explain you the details. First about Sarkozy, because it's an easy one. Basically, Sarkozy came to St. Petersburg, which the Russian press trumpeted as a big success. I'm not sure that a group like that is a very good indicator of new rapprochement. We saw his rapprochement with Gaddafi.
Right.
But Sarkozy came to St. Petersburg, and what he said was that Russia should first repeal its counter-sanctions against the European Union. The sanctions that were imposed by Russia in return as a response to the EU sanctions.
Right.
And he put a sugar coating on this offer of basically a surrender, saying that the strongest one, you know, the wisest one should, you know, should outstretch his arm first. Mm-hmm. And that strongest one is you, President Vladimir Putin. Well, it seems to me that, you know, that sounded very much like not a French Republican. That sounded like some medieval Persian or Turkish flattery, you know,
right.
with something like a dagger not too far away from that hand outstretched.
And the EU, while that was going on, the EU extended the sanctions another 6 months.
Exactly. But I didn't have an impression that Putin was particularly impressed by this general offer. He probably, you know, the good thing about these sanctions is that they gave a boost to Russia's agriculture, because now that we don't buy things from the French farmers, our farmers started producing them. And the French farmers are a very difficult pack of people, you know. They are the ones who continuously block the government offices in France and even in Brussels. And you better not quarrel with them. So by imposing these so-called counter sanctions on the EU, Putin actually killed two rabbits with one stroke. Mm. Our agriculture is getting a boost. And the French government is going to face these rowdy guys, you know, from the French villages. You better not face them. In a way, I think this message from Mr. Sarkozy that you lift sanctions first, this is a sign of weakness from the EU, but a very distant one. And the second issue that you raised, I think it's a lot more serious. That was the German foreign minister saying, I quote exactly what he said, Europe's security will not be improved by continuous military games near the Russian border. So it was not exactly like Steinmeier, that's the name of that German foreign minister, it was not exactly him saying that he didn't like the games or that he understood the Russian position. It was just, you know, as the French historians called it, a rebellion on his knees, you know. He is still standing on his knees before Washington and before Brussels. I think Steinmeier let himself be humiliated in 2014. He was one of the so-called guarantors of the agreement between Yanukovych and the Ukrainian opposition when it was supposed that they would stop storming the presidential office with Molotov cocktails. And in return, Yanukovych would agree to an election before the end of the year. So Steinmeier guaranteed this agreement very generously. And this agreement was breached minutes after it was signed by the nationalist thugs, you know, who pressed ahead, burnt alive two people in the office of Yanukovych's political party, and basically took hold of the presidential administration by force. You can imagine what will happen to these people in the United States. But Steinmeier and Obama said that these were all peaceful protests. You know, people turned out to be like more impatient than we expected. And Steinmeier, of course, looked like a completely shameless person when he was completely silent, you know. I would like to have such a guarantee even for my toothbrush being bought in a food store, not to speak about political agreements.
Yeah.
So he was humiliated so many times, and now we see his rebellion on his knees. But I think that's the problem with the problem of trading with your principles once. In a few years or in a few months, when you want to do something that would prove to people that you are a man, that you are a human being, and you have your own dignity, Mr. Obama can at any moment just remind Mr. Steinmeier, I saw how you behaved in Kiev in 2014. You turned out to be a complete weakling, you know. We broke your dignity, and you agreed to that. So shut up,
and do what we tell you. And if you try to contradict us, you know what will follow. So I would not read too much into this statement by Mr. Steinmeier. What he said was actually just like too many exercises near the Russian border, because just recently they had an exercise of in Poland called the Anaconda. There were 31,000 soldiers participating, 14,000 out of them Americans. And there were two more additional military games taking place at the same time in the Baltics and in the Nordic countries, right next to Russia's border. So now they're going to have the fourth one called Saber Rattle, whatever that means. And here, Mr. Steinmeier obviously had his Geduld, or that's the German word for patience. He had his patience running thing.
You know, at the time that he was negotiating and preparing to guarantee the agreement that was being negotiated, we heard what the actual U.S. position was coming out of Newland's mouth on the telephone with respect to the EU.
Yes, I think she should add it as her second name. Victoria, do something to EU, Newland.
And while the war games have been going on, from the Nordic countries all the way down to the Black Sea, right? You had the ship enter the Black Sea. Also in the east, you've had off the Korean Peninsula, in the South China Sea, and even off of the coast of India, war games going on there as well.
Well, you are right. There are military exercises all along the Russian border. Of course, the South Korean exercises, the United States would tell you that they are all against the terrible dictators in the north. Yeah. But again, Russia has reasons to be concerned about these exercises, because it's quite clear that if a war breaks out in North Korea, Russia would not be safe. And it, just like China and other neighbors, Russia would not be able to sit it out untouched.
Are we looking at a 1980 moment with respect to the Olympics? It's when Jimmy Carter decided the United States would not attend the Moscow Olympics. And now we're looking at the U.S.-led effort to bar Russia from the Olympics in Brazil.
Well, I think this time it's a lot worse, and for several reasons. First, the so-called boycott of the Olympics, which Carter announced in the end of 1979, right, as a reaction, and it was a reaction to the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan. So there was a very clear political reason. Now there is no clear political reason for what happened. They say that this is just they are not quite happy with the substances that some Russian athletes might be using, so they decided to slap a blanket ban, not just on the Russian Olympic team, but also on hundreds of other people, not the Olympic athletes, who go to various countries, participating in various smaller competitions and making their own hard-won small money out of it. You can go to a place like Japan, and if you get like a silver or bronze medal at the local marathon, you can make $4,000 or $5,000 of it, and for some people in Russia, that is good money. So basically, it's a very unfair decision, and the reason why I think it's worse than 1980. First, there was a political and even moral reason in 1980. Now there is none. Second, in 1980, the athletes, including the American athletes, did not participate in this dirty game. It was just Jimmy Carter. And even Europe did not participate, right? Even European politicians did not participate. Now, the nasty thing is that there are athletes participating. There are German athletes writing nasty letters to the International Olympic Committee asking for the Russian athletes to be barred from the Olympics. And of course, you can see a very clear material motive here, because the so-called International Association of Athletic Federations, which actually put the ban on Russians, it made an exception for a woman runner, Yulia Stepanova, who actually started this whole thing by defecting to Germany
And from Germany, he accused the Russian authorities of having a doping program. She did not produce any evidence. Just her husband also fled, and he was supposedly participated in the doping program, which I think makes him a criminal. Another guy, Georgi Rodchenkov, fled to the United States, and in the United States he suddenly repented. And he also said that he gave prohibited substances to athletes. Correct me if I'm wrong, but he committed a crime. So basically, he should be put in jail in the United States. But instead, he's put in television studios, denouncing Russia. So that woman, Yulia Stepanova, a runner, she will be participating in the Olympic Games under the Olympic flag. So the problem is that she is a much worse athlete than Yelena Isinbayeva, the famous Russian track and field athlete who won the last three Olympic Games. And my guess is that the reason why the German athletes are asking for a blanket ban on their Russian colleagues is because if they compete with Stepanova, they have an almost 100% chance. If they compete against Isinbayeva, they have a zero chance, and they're afraid of that. And that's why they write these nasty letters. So that makes it very different from 1980, because in 1980, athletes were friends with each other, the Soviet athletes and the American athletes. There were American athletes who went to Moscow despite the boycott, saying that Mr. Carter can do whatever he wants, and he can stick that boycott wherever he wants. They will compete because this is a chance of their lives. And they don't care what the politicians think about it. So I think we now have lost less freedom, because now you can put a blanket ban on a whole country. Now you can have athletes doing nasty intrigues against other athletes. And now this is all just very, very thinly disguised.
Do you think this all fits into the geopolitical game the U.S. has been playing against the BRICS countries, particularly in Brazil, with the soft coup that took place there, that they were afraid perhaps of, for example, Putin putting his arm around Dilma Rousseff or some similar public relations activity?
Yeah, I think that, of course, all of it is a part of geopolitics, and you can... I can remind you of the campaign in the Western press against the Sochi Olympics in 2014. I think it's all part of that big picture. And if people tell you that thinking like that is a conspiracy theory, this is simply stupid, because the whole campaign was so clearly there. You remember how the Western press claimed that all homosexual athletes would be arrested in Sochi, or they would face some other dangers. Nothing ever happened.
They said the toilets didn't work, all of that stuff too, remember?
All of that stuff. So it was a nasty campaign, and now what we see is again a nasty campaign. And not to see it, you just have to be blind. So it's very stupid to be a conspiracy theorist if there are no conspiracies against you. But if you have an open escalation of pressure, and if you have open discrimination like the one that we're having now, it is simply stupid not to know what they said. So I think that the International Association of Athletic Federations, by its behavior, it showed that it is under influence from the EU and from the United States. It showed that unfortunately, sports are getting more and more politicized, and the hopes that sports would work as a tool for peace, I think these hopes are quickly dissipating.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.